you so much for talking with me today. How are you?
I'm doing great. I was a little confused, actually, when I was... Because Chip usually gives people my contact, and they've usually asked me for a contact first. So anyway, that was... Because I don't do Skype all the time, right? And I was like, okay, how do I call this person now? So, but I found you, so that's good.
Oh, I'm sorry about that. I'm used to the bands calling me, so I never send out the contact request.
Oh, no worry. No worries. Yeah, we're talking, so that's good, right?
Yeah, that's why I leave everything public. I'm just like, oh, everything's public.
Cool.
Tell me the story behind Fire and Gasoline. How did you choose the album name?
Oh, that's interesting. To be honest with you, we really had a hard time. We struggled to find a good name for the album. I really wasn't set on using a song. I mean, I guess the best case scenario is if you've got a song that's got a really strong title that can be used as an album title as well. And so while we were sort of bantering around ideas, the gentleman actually that A&R'd the album at ILS Universal called me and he said, "What about Fire and Gasoline?" And I said, "Well, really?" And he said, "Yeah." He said, "I think it's an awesome rock title. And I think that because the album was coming out worldwide, his theory behind it, which actually was a really clever one, was that Fire and Gasoline says rock album no matter what language you're interpreting in it, right?
So absolutely.
Yeah, so, you know, someone in Germany can read Fire and Gasoline, and someone in Japan can read Fire and Gasoline and go, yeah, it says rock and roll, right?
It kind of encompasses the feeling.
Well, and, you know, in the end, I think that, yeah, you know, I wrote a lot about relationships and the human condition and passion on this record, and all of those things tend to be quite emotionally combustive, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it kind of encompassed the tenor of the album in the end anyway.
Yeah. What was the recording process like?
Oh, the recording process was really cool. It's funny because with digital technology, so many people are just doing albums. You know, you can record tracks in Vancouver and send them to Germany and have somebody put guitars on them, right? But, and that had been suggested to me because that really, if you don't have your players all living in the same town in the same place, I think a lot of people are doing that because it's a more cost-effective way of doing things, but I was dead set against it. So I was like, no way, Jose, you know, my band is going to fly out, we're going to do pre-production, and we are actually going to go into the same studio all together in the same room and play the songs in real time together live off the floor. So that really is my philosophy. I mean, you know, maybe it's considered more of an old school way of recording, but, you know, I truly believe that records that are timeless, the records that I love that are timeless and that have longevity, have that energy on them. And so I flew my guitar player out from Toronto, and we went into a studio out here called The Farm. It used to be, it's divided a couple of years ago into The Farm and The Factory. It used to be Little Mountain Sound, which is quite a renowned Vancouver studio here. Bon Jovi, Aerosmith, Motley Crue. I'm just trying to think of, like, there's countless acts that have gone in there and done huge, hugely successful records. So, you know, there was sort of a vibe about that studio and an energy about that studio that I really loved the idea of going into. You know, when you walk into the studio and there's no windows and there's all these gold records on the walls and and there's, you know, the huge consoles, and, you know, it actually had a couple of really great rooms for recording drums, which I thought was essential as well. And so I think just the whole vibe of going into that studio alone was really good for my band and good for all of us to sort of capture that kind of, you know, golden energy, if so to speak.
Yeah, creativity definitely lingers in the air, I say.
Absolutely.
Which song off the album is the most sentimental to you?
Pardon me. A few people have asked me that. You know, They all have different sort of stories behind them, I guess. The one probably that is the most sentimental would be the last song, the final track on the album, Find the Love. That was written for a friend of mine who passed away last June. The inspiration came from my friend who had been struggling. She had had a cancer diagnosis 4 years ago and had a mastectomy, and then she had the same gene that, so she had all the subsequent surgeries to, should do everything possible to not have a recurrence, and unfortunately came back tenfold, and she was diagnosed with bone cancer in the spring of last year. And so when I got that news that my friend, who was young and healthy and strong and one of the most beautiful people that I knew, had four children, was not going to make it. It was devastating. And that song was written in a very short amount of time. It was written the same day that I got the news, really. I was vacationing with my family in the interior of BC out on a lake, and I picked up my acoustic guitar and I sort of penned the song in about a half an hour. And then, of course, songs evolve as you work on them. And I realized when the song was completed that it really wasn't just for my friend Carrie. It was for everybody who's had their life touched by illness and medication and surgeries and loss, right? Like, and who's gone through that process in their life with a family member or a close friend. It's incredible how many people I think that resonates with.
I'm very sorry for your loss.
Well, thanks. That's the only way to prevent dying is to never be born.
Yeah.
But not to make light of it, but I think it's one of those processes we go through in our life, right, where we realize that it really is such a precious gift, and I think you start thinking of that far more as you get a little bit older. And I mean, this last year, of course, has been just devastating for everybody who's a music lover, because we have lost, I mean, the two biggest shockers for me was Bowie and Prince, just recently Prince. And Lemmy wasn't a surprise because he lived so hard. But these other guys, man, we just, like, some of our greatest artists are leaving us and so young, and it's just, it's, not to be on a sad note here, but it makes you just so appreciate the musical gifts that they've left us with, and just everyone in your life that's meaningful to you, really. You realize that it's not as you're not as immortal as you thought you were when you were 20 years old, right?
Absolutely. I feel like the one silver lining is that it's really bringing people back together and giving music even more of a community than it had before. Because I kind of felt like the community was falling apart a little bit, and then this kind of brought everybody together and made them appreciate.
Well, it brings up about a common topic of discussion, right? And therefore brings people together with stories, through story, through memories, through comments and opinions about things. So yeah, you're absolutely right about that, for sure. yeah.
And music is healing.
Yeah.
But tell me, on a different note, tell me about the music video for Tomboy. How did you come up with the concept? And I hear that your daughter and her friends were the band in the video.
That's totally true. Well, I'd written the song Tomboy for my daughter. It's funny because a couple of European magazines where there was something was lost, I think, in the translation. The comment that was made was that, oh, this song Tomboy, it just seems like it's a teeny popper song. And it's like, no, it was written for my daughter. It's not autobiographical, right? Yeah, I was inspired by her, because right now she's 11. She was 10 at the time. And I just love when they're that age and they're not hampered by all of the images that our beauty culture foists upon young women, you know, it's just, I mean, it's out there all the time, right? You walk down any grocery store aisle and you see magazines and it's just, you know, in your face. You know, it just seems like the more shocking people can be, the more, it almost feels like there's no level left to shock at anymore. And sometimes I look at this and I'm going, man, are these really the messages that I want my daughter to be influenced by and to be thinking she needs to compete with? And it's absolutely not. And that's the life lessons that I'm attempting to give her at home are quite different from that. And so, but you know, that age before they become teenagers and, you know, enter that teenage stage, they're not really affected by that. And I just love that. And I think when you reach a point in your life too, where you've, you know, lived through some stuff and lived through motherhood, and like I have, you know, you get to a point where, you know, you're kind of like, too bad, so sad, this is the package and this is what it is, and you start really appreciating yourself more and not judging yourself or putting yourself up against those standards. And so in a weird way, we're kind of in the same place. And so Tomboy, yeah, was written for my daughter, and it was supposed to be a song of empowerment and just an anthem for young girls, an anthem of positivity, of not having to conform to, you know, certainly not the sexual stereotypes that are being sort of driven down our throats all the time. And the idea occurred to me, well, wouldn't it be cool if I actually had a band of real tomboys? And so I recruited my daughter and her friends. They go to a fine arts school. And so finding some girls that were interested in doing it was not a difficult task. And I gave them the song, and it really resonated with them. You know, they came to the rehearsal and they all knew the song like the back of their hand, and put instruments in their hands, and they totally rose to the occasion of, you know, playing air guitar and you know, the girl that played drums, I was just so impressed with her, the way she was able to, she like literally was playing the song in about a half an hour. It was, yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah.
That is incredible.
Yeah. Well, you see how it makes me, you know, look at young people and go, man, like, you know, if they just focus, they can pick up things so fast. Right. So, and you know, just the whole experience of writing a song for female youth, and then being able to involve them in the process of the video, it was really, really empowering for them. And, you know, the cool thing is when the link went up on YouTube, I sent it to my daughter's teacher, and it got, you know, it ended up making the rounds throughout the whole school. So the girls were actually rock stars for a week at school. Everyone in school was asking for their autograph. And so it was, like I said, very empowering for them and really cool for them as well. So.
That is absolutely incredible and probably the best way to send the message across.
Well, thanks. Yeah, I thought so.
I hear you will be performing in Canada soon. Are you looking forward to these festivals?
I am. You know, every summer I go out here and do usually a string of festivals. And right now my calendar is starting to fill up. So, yes, I'm very excited to be going out there and to be adding. We've already added a few shows from Fire and Gasoline, but we were careful not to play any of the songs that were going to be video singles, because I didn't want, my fear was that whenever I play a show, there's always like 20 people in the front row with an iPhone camera. And sometimes before I even get home to check my Facebook, there's videos of us live up on YouTube already. And you know, 90% of the time, the audio is horrible because it's been filmed with an iPhone. And so we were very tenacious not to play any of, like, Tomboy or Fire and Gasoline live yet in those circumstances, because we didn't want iPhone videos going up there before the actual videos came out, right? So, but yeah, I'm looking forward to putting these songs in my set and getting out there and rocking it live.
Heck yeah. But technology has definitely changed the face of music, that's for sure.
Yes, it has. You know, in some ways good, in some ways not good.
What image do you think your music conveys as a whole?
Wow. I've never been asked that. You know, and I'm always love it when I get asked new questions because I get asked a lot of the same stuff. That's really interesting. Like, have you asked other people that in the past?
A couple.
And what kind of responses have you gotten?
One has not responded and kind of went with the music speaks for itself and whatever people kind of interpret is what they'll get. And then another just had a completely clear visual image of what they wanted their music to be and how they wanted music to be interpreted by their fans. So it's kind of interesting. I've gotten a range.
Huh. How do I want to be interpreted? You know, I think that my music over the years has always, I think, embodied strength and empowerment, especially for women, but for anyone. Like, I get a lot of emails, you know, through Facebook and to my website where, you know, I got one from a guitar player from Brazil the other day, and he sent me some tracks, and they were fabulous. I was listening to them. This is just a young guy in his 20s. He's like, you know, me and my girlfriend were like the biggest Lee Aaron fans, and, you know, my girlfriend sings, and he said, I just have to tell you, your music's gotten us through some really tough times, and, you know, we just love you, and my girlfriend wants to emulate you. And so I like to think that my music is strong and empowering, and but it also has deeper messages that resonate with people. You know, while my music, usually the backdrop for most Lee Aaron songs are powerful guitars, I don't think, you know, I've always tried to embody themes throughout my music that sort of struck a deeper chord and were about certainly more interesting subject matter than just, you know, we're here to rock, you know, like, you know, there's other people that do that better than I do anyway, right? So, yeah, I mean, even a song like Metal Queen from years ago is, you know, a song of female empowerment. And so, yeah, I'd like to think that it's strong and powerful without being over the top.
Absolutely, and still a lot of fun to listen to.
I hope so, yeah.
What are your fondest musical memories?
Now, do you mean just musical memories or just memories of touring or memories as a whole of being in the music industry?
Either.
You know, and I've said this before, my fondest memories really aren't so much, you know, like, you know, being in the studio recording this song. In fact, sometimes the studio process can be grueling, you know, depending on the producer you're working with and, you know, the whole process. But so my fondest memories really are traveling to different places in the world and meeting really unique people that, like, worked at my record label, that took us to really interesting places. I remember when we were touring a few, you know, years ago, and we did one of our first shows in Paris at this place called The Locomotive. I don't even know if it's there anymore. And the label came out, and they took us out. It was quite common in Paris that people go out and, like, eat at midnight, right? Like, after all of the nightlife is, you know, they go out, we must go out, and we must eat, and we must drink wine. And, you know, and they took, and of course, the architecture in Europe is just mind-blowing because these buildings were built hundreds of years ago. Some of them took hundreds of years to build. And, you know, there was a real architectural artisanship about the way things were done. And I remember we went into this restaurant and like there was like gold pillars, you know, in all corners of the restaurant. And when you looked at the ceiling, it was the whole ceiling had been painted by a Renaissance painter. And I remember sitting there, and I ordered mussels and white wine sauce, and we shared Beaujolais Nouveau, and I remember trying to engage in a conversation, but not being unable to stop looking at the ceiling. Like, I was just so bowled over by just being in this environment, and, you know, thinking, okay, this is my life. This is just surreal, you know. so my fondest really memories are, like I said, just traveling and experiencing places. I remember we were in Germany one time, and we had a couple days off, and we were staying in this little German town that, and it was quite, it's quite common in Germany for a lot of these older little villages to be completely surrounded by a wall for protection. And of course, the wall wasn't in use anymore. Well, we weren't in war. We're not in medieval times, right? War times. But I remember everything looked like a, you know, a pseudo gingerbread house. And at night, you could put like, you know, a euro in this wall, slot on the side of this wall, and the whole wall would light up. And it was, and, you know, we sat there, you know, we dragged our big steins of beer over to the wall, and we kept putting, plugging this wall so that it would light up for 10 minutes, right? Because it was just, you know, so just, you know, really just the memories that were created through those years of traveling and the cool, just the cool things that I got to do, you know, and the people that I got to meet and, you know, going to Tokyo first time. And I remember, I remember the shows, but what I mostly remember is the tourist day, being off and being taken around by the label, you know, and going to like the Sony store in downtown Tokyo is like 10 stories high, and every floor has like a different new thing that you know is not going to be out over, you know, out here, an electronic device that's not going to be out here for a couple of years, and just being, my mind being blown by that, right? so those are kind of my coolest memories of you know, and of course they're all in, the whole thing is landscaped in music as well, right?
Yeah, the world is a very big place.
Or as the older you get and the more places you've been, you start thinking it's actually a very small place.
Interesting.
Because you could be living in Osaka and I could be having the same conversation with you right now in real time, right?
Yeah, we've definitely been connected. Any final words before we conclude this interview?
I don't know. I don't know anything you want to know.
Anything you want your fans to know?
Well, I want my fans to know. Well, then, that I am, that we're, yeah, be part of the grassroots movement. This is my first album released in the States, and we are, you know, doing a lot of press and promotion, trying to sort of get an underground movement going of fans. It's so hard out there, I think, the internet and digital technology have made it easier to get your music out there. Creating a buzz has become harder than ever because other phone is ringing. I'm so sorry about that, Annabelle.
No worries at all.
Competing in, you know, sorry about that.
No worries at all.
Some weirdo is calling Lee Aaron's house. Anyway, you know, the competition is just, you know, unbelievable. So, you know, the whole modus operandi right now is to kind of try to get a grassroots. Oh, sorry about that.
No worries. That happens to me as well.
Of course. I'm in the middle of Skype, and here we go. I'll tell you what this phone call is about. This is your secret fan thing. I live on a piece of land that's worth a lot of money right now because the city wants, they want to buy it.
Oh.
And because I live on a corner that's being developed, and I don't want to sell my home and my land because we love it here. And I have acreage property, and I've got a park for a backyard. And I am being hounded every day by real estate agents. And that was just one on the phone for me again.
Oh, goodness. This is happening in California right now as well. I have relatives who are being hounded for their properties.
It's unbelievable. Like, we have said no, 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 and they are absolutely tenacious. So, anyway, so sorry about that. I wasn't expecting a call at this time, but
no worries.
This has been one of my real estate stalkers calling me.
Maybe with them getting public, they'll stop.
So, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, maybe with them being featured in a public interview, they'll stop. They'll see how annoying they are.
You never know. Anyway, get on the Lee Aaron ship. We're trying to get a grassroots movement going, get enough of a buzz going that that we're going to get to the States and tour very soon. And I know that you're in the California area. That's correct, Annabelle?
Yes.
Yeah, so we're looking at trying to get a L.A. and U.S. L.A. and New York showcase on the map first and then take it from there. So, yeah, you just might see me down in the California area very soon. So, yeah.
Perfect. Thank you so much.
Hey, it was an absolute pleasure talking to you, Annabelle.
Likewise.
Yeah, you take care, and hopefully we'll talk real soon.
Absolutely.